Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Back in the day, the doctor was almost always a man. No more. Women now make up half of medical school graduates. But then what? Dr. Karen Seibert was part of that first big wave of women into medicine. This week, she published an essay that has that world in an uproar. Too many women doctors, she wrote, are going too part-time, even leaving the field to raise children. Medicine, she wrote, takes more commitment than that, and the country can't spare the trained talent. Oh, has there been pushback? This hour On Point, work, family, and the practice of medicine. You can join the conversation. Women doctors, do you have an obligation to stay fully engaged? What about your kids and patients? What about part-time doctors? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later this hour, we will hear from Sheryl Sandberg, Chief Operations Officer of Facebook, telling new college graduates, women, not to lean back from careers, but to lean in. But first, work life and women in medicine. Joining me now from Los Angeles is Dr. Karen Seibert, mother and full-time anesthesiologist. Her essay, Don't Quit This Day Job, appeared in the New York Times on Sunday. Dr. Seibert, welcome to On Point. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Boy, have you stirred it up. The response online is just out of sight. Did you know quite how provocative this was going to strike people?
Yes, I think I did. It's the response of conversations with a lot of people over a long period of time. I think what galvanized me into writing it in the first place was not concern over the women who are currently working part-time, but the way the supply-demand trajectory is going. Right now, if things continue as they are, for every doctor who retires, we'll need 1.5 to 2 doctors to replace him or her. And the problem is we just don't have the capacity to train more doctors. If you have an unlimited supply of doctors, then all kinds of work restructuring and job sharing are possible. I think, of course, women should be doctors, and I think doctors make great mothers. But our primary mission as doctors is to take care of the patients. Right now we have a critical shortage of doctors in many fields, including general surgery for one, and we don't have the capacity either to expand medical schools or to expand residency training programs in order to produce more doctors.
So what's the trend among doctors and women doctors you're writing about in particular here in terms of that's got you worried in terms of women doctors, you know, doing part-time work or leaving the field? What are you seeing happening, Dr. Seibert?
Well, first of all, it isn't just women, and I want to make that point very clearly.
Though you write pointedly about women in your essay, it is all about women, or nearly.
Well, I'm sure you've had this experience that whenever you write something, it's edited substantially. The original piece that I submitted to the New York Times was about 3 times as long, and it had all that balance in it. At some point, you get to choose between do you want your major point to be heard or are you going to stand on ceremony and say every single thing you want to say?
Well, that's fair enough, but
you never have that luxury.
All right, so, but I've seen your full piece, and it talks about the mommy track. So, I mean, just...
Well, that's a different piece, and that's written for a doctor audience.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
What I talk about in the op-ed piece is very simply the problem is mostly women, simply because women comprise the largest number of people who are working part-time. That's just the numbers. I didn't make them up. The way it is. For men doctors, if they work part-time, they tend to do it toward the end of their careers as they just simply slow down. So the concern is that it's women at peak years, 35 to 40s, who are going part-time very early in their careers, before they have even a great deal of experience or a great deal of practice. And the trend seems to be that they don't go back. Everybody likes to think, well, they just do it for a few years when the kids are small, and the data isn't really showing that either. They don't go back. And what's even more frightening and I think sadder is the number of people who leave the profession, and this is not just women, this is men too, they leave either, in the case of some people, simply to find more lucrative jobs outside of medicine. And for women, some do indeed decide to stay home with children, and you really, it's very difficult to come back.
You just can't re-enter the workforce.
Part-time,
anybody could understand that, I suppose. Medicine's very demanding. We'll talk about that. But leaving medicine after all that training, what kind of person makes that decision? I mean, any human being can decide to do anything, and it's certainly not, I'm not here to judge, but you kind of are. You're saying there's a moral obligation to serve once you've got that education, and very often it includes a large dose of public resources that are along with a lot of private resources in that education. What's the profile of the relatively young doctor who leaves the field entirely around these issues?
You'd have to ask them. There really aren't statistics, and I can't answer that question. Frankly, I'm just as baffled by it as you are. Why anyone would want to go through all the training, all the nights on call, all the work. I can certainly, to a point, understand the young mother that has her first child and falls in love with the child. We all do. Mm-hmm. Babies are wonderful. They smell good. They're soft. They're cuddly. And she just thinks, oh, I just can't go back. Well, if you have a career that isn't as technical, it doesn't involve the expertise, and is in limitless supply, that's one thing. Medicine isn't like that. So you are really, I am totally sympathetic to the urge to stay with that baby, but you've taken a great gift from your society, from the American public, at a time when resources are scarce, where there isn't going to be funding for more medical schools or more residency positions. For the last 2 years in a row, Congress has tried to pass legislation to add to the number of residency positions, and it's fallen by the wayside. There just isn't money. So we don't have more doctors.
So, I mean, you write, you say students who aspire to go to medical school should think about the consequences if they decide to work part-time or leave clinical medicine, that is, practicing medicine with patients. You go on, you say, they must understand that medical education is a privilege, not an entitlement, and it confers a real moral obligation to serve. Put that in practical, you know, hours per week terms. What does that mean to you? You know, what does it take to say you're fulfilling your moral obligation to serve, and you're not?
I would never pass judgment on anyone like that. And there are lots of different ways that we all contribute to medicine. I specifically say clinical medicine because, again, the fundamental job is to take care of the patients. But the person who teaches medical students, the person who goes to work for a corporation and invents a new artificial hip, or a person who invented pacemakers, they weren't at the bedside, but they were doing incredibly valuable work. That's not really the issue. I think the issue is the people who just don't use that training, I think they're letting the American people down to some degree.
Yeah, and I mean, you're pretty tough. You say medicine should not be a part-time interest to be set aside if it becomes inconvenient. It deserves to be a life's work. Is 40 hours a week enough? Is 30? Is 20?
I can't really answer that. I think that's up to the individual. What you have to consider, though, is medicine, among so many fields, is one where experience and judgment are critical. And what we worry about as we look at the decrease in hours put in, both at the resident training level and by doctors in practice, is they're doing fewer cases, they're seeing fewer patients. How do you get that critical volume of experience? Often, the practice of medicine is compared to aviation in a lot of ways. And it used to be that British Airways, for example, would not let pilots fly part-time until they had a certain number of years of experience. So again, if you have 20 years of experience and then you decide to go part-time, that's probably not going to make a difference. If you're very young and your first job out of residency is part-time, that's a different story.
But of course, most young women, I mean, coming out of residency, they're jamming right up against the end of the biological clock ticking there. They don't have a lot of time at that point to have children, and they're headed right into
childbirth.
And
that's exactly the problem. Mm-hmm. That's exactly the problem. And I'm not saying for a second I have an answer to it. What I'm concerned about is the degree to which Well, let me give you an example. I got a lovely email from a young woman who's about to finish her training in obstetrics and gynecology. Mm-hmm. And she told me that she got offered part-time jobs when she wanted a full-time job because there was now this assumption that she would only want to work part-time and that she was perhaps an unfit mother if she wanted to work full-time. And she said she was very grateful I had written the article because it made her feel as though her choice was validated.
You're saying the country can't afford it, though, if it's part-time or leaving right. the field. But what about the family? What about that young woman's family, her kids?
Well, I think that's a decision that every working mother has to make. And that's not restricted to medicine. That's no matter what you do. For women in this country, frankly, the vast majority of them don't really have a choice. They work to feed their families. This work-life balance is a luxury that most women don't even have. And I can understand how women in pink-collar jobs would be very resentful of those of us who can afford to even think about cutting back on their work.
But it's not really every woman's situation here. I mean, you're talking about a moral obligation. If you work at the perfume counter and you want to take time off to raise your kids, nobody's going to complain about that. But you're saying there's
right.
a moral obligation to serve once there's a medical degree. Can you I mean, how do you do that? How do you be a full mom and do that? You've had four kids. You've raised several. Can you do it all?
Yes, I have.
You can't have it all.
No, you
That's
can't
pretty
have
tough.
It all. You absolutely can't. And something... things, it's always a balancing act. It's always a juggling act. You have to be organized. You have to do what you need to do to get the absolute best support network for yourself that you can.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about a high-profile call for women doctors not to back off their careers, not to go part-time, not to quit for kids, not to take a mommy track. Dr. Karen Seibert wrote an essay for the New York Times last weekend that has got a lot of attention in the medical field and beyond. She's with us today from Los Angeles. She says, you cannot have it all. We're going to hear from a doctor who has gone the part-time route and thinks it works just fine, and from a medical professional watching lots of women and men in medicine and their career, their work balance issues, work-life issues. Dr. Seibert in L.A., let me get a few calls in here, then we'll bring in a doctor who's done it a different way. Ilana in Brookline, Massachusetts. Ilana, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I would like to get some opinions about my teenage daughter's pediatrician, who is a wonderful clinician. She's a woman, and she works part-time. Some of the issues we have, we never get same-day callbacks. She's very hard to reach with our concerns. It's very hard to schedule appointments. On the other hand, she doesn't rush us through the appointments, and she has great rapport with my daughter. If she didn't have such a strong relationship, I would absolutely switch because of the logistic issues.
I don't know if she's a mother, Ilana, but you are clearly. Yeah, I mean, would you blame her for taking? Would you blame her for working part time if she had kids who needed her attention also?
Well, I think it's like what your panelist said. She needs to make a decision about: is she going to remain fully committed to her career, or is she going to take a significant amount of time off to be with her family? And I do agree that this is one of those situations where she might be at a point in her time that she can't do both, and that it very much affects how I as a parent can feel about my relationship and investing time to build a relationship with her that will in the long term benefit my daughter medically. One issue is we're dealing with some chronic health conditions,
yep.
and that has to be a situation where we hear back right away. When I call with concerns, I really expect that she would call back the same day, whether or not she was full-time or part-time. I think that's something that a good pediatrician would do.
Expectations are high. Ilana, let us hold that thought right there. Get a couple more calls here. Robin, thank you, Ilana. Robin in Franklin, Tennessee. Robin, you're on the air.
Hi. I am a physician. I'm a general internist, and I work part-time, and I'm also a mother of two.
Yeah.
And I wanted to say I just love my situation, and when I go in to see my patients, I feel refreshed, and I feel like I can give them 100% of my energy and attention, and when I go home, I can do the same with my children. And if I were to work full-time, I feel like I would be just a miserable doctor. I'd be a miserable mother. And I just wouldn't last. So this is the way to my longevity. And really, I think it makes me a better doctor.
Robin, I'm very happy to hear that as well. Let us hold that one. You're an internist doing it part-time, and no other way would seem quite healthy to you. And one more here. Then we'll bounce beyond Jody in Boston. Jody, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hello. Hi. I'm an OBGYN. I'm in the, I guess, the second wave of physicians. I trained in the 80s. And the job that I took out of residency at a time after when I had small children was technically part-time.
Mm-hmm.
In that job, however, I worked 60 to 70 hours a week.
Wow.
And took six calls, 36-hour shifts. And my full-time partners definitely worked more hours than I. But I switched to a technically a full-time job when my kids got older because of chronic back issues. But nonetheless, in my full-time job, I was lucky enough to find a job that is fewer hours. And I have to agree with the earlier caller that to deny women the opportunity to be able to be engaged with their families, I think, is a system problem. I think it's a problem with the field of medicine and one that we need to be more flexible about. So I completely agree with Dr. Siebert that, you know, this is a career. It's not a job. You have to be fully engaged in it. But I think you can be fully engaged in it without technically being full-time in the paradigm of this profession, which is incredibly demanding.
Jody, we've got it, and I appreciate your call as well. Certainly, if part-time is 60 or 70 hours a week, that seems pretty engaged. And 100 hours, I don't know how you do that in parent, but then, hey, I'm not a doctor. Dr. Siebert, please stand by there in L.A. I want to bring in Dr. Kathleen Fairfield from Portland, Maine. She's Associate Chief of Medicine at the Maine Medical Center, primary care physician and epidemiologist. Works part-time, mother of two school-aged children. Dr. Fairfield, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So you probably read Dr. Seibert's essay. She says you can't have it all. There's a moral obligation to serve. You're serving part-time. Do you feel like you're ducking?
Absolutely not. Yeah, I'd like to, first of all, thank all the, my many colleagues who have spoken to me about this over the last few days.
Mm-hmm.
But one of my big issues with what she said is that this is a lack of commitment. And I think that women and men who work part-time in medicine are absolutely committed to medicine. None of us would have gone into it and done the years of training that we did if we were not committed to medicine and taking care of patients. But that the decision to have children also is a huge commitment. And
mm-hmm.
I think that you can absolutely do both. There are enough hours in the day to do both and to do it well. And I really liked Robin's point, too, the earlier caller, that she feels refreshed and she feels energized and she feels fully there for both of her jobs.
I think anybody can respond to that and can hear that. On the other hand, what about the – there's all kinds of structural issues here, but one is Dr. Siebert raises – we don't and will not have enough doctors in this country, and if we're putting in the resources to educate people, then they're not leaving the field or working part-time. We're just going to fall short of what the public needs. What about that, Dr. Fairfield?
Sure. Physicians leave medicine because they're unsatisfied. It's one of the many reasons that people leave medicine. We know that from a big body of evidence that part-time physicians have higher satisfaction with their jobs. There are lower physician disability claims and errors. There's less burnout. There's less absenteeism and inefficiency. We don't know. She stated that we don't know. She said that women don't come back, fully. And I don't know that we know that yet. What's going to happen with my generation of part-time physicians, whether we'll return to full time as our kids enter, middle school and high school. And I think she's making some assumptions that she really has no basis to make. I also think that if women stay in the field longer, physicians who choose to work part time stay in medicine, we won't be contributing to the problem of the primary care shortfall, particularly. Primary care already is a field that fewer people than ever want to go into. It's low paying. It is populated more by women than men. And I think that the physician workforce problem, not allowing women or not encouraging women to go into primary care specialties would be a grave mistake.
I want to look at that with you and Dr. Siebert. Dr. Maureen Conley joins us in just a moment. Let me get a call here from Kim in Pocatello, Idaho. Kim, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to call in and kind of mention the fact I have four children myself, and there is no way that I could have anticipated the impact that that was going to have on my life emotionally. Mm. And I think that it's kind of unrealistic to say, you know, yes, you're a woman, yes, you went to all of this medical school, now you have this profound experience of having a child, you know, scratch that and continue along this path. So I think that is kind of unrealistic too.
Just
not put that into perspective. But I also wanted to say, you know, I do have four children, and I'm only 33, and I have been, you know, I've studied and have a degree in economics, and, you know, have spent about the last 10 years of my life doing sales, and now I'm considering a switch to go back and go to medical school because I have, you know, I have kind of older children, children that are not going to be as maintenance intensive for the next couple of years. And, you know, medicine, for me at this point, is kind of looking like a good option. And so I wonder if the medical community has considered addressing, you know, women in a different stage of their life and trying to recruit and bring them into the field.
Let me raise that in a moment when Dr. Conley joins us, if I may, Kim. But I appreciate your call. And let me get one more before we take it back to Dr. Seibert in Los Angeles. Miriam in Salt Lake City, Utah. Miriam, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm not a doctor. I am a parent. But I have to tell you, just listening, I was incensed at the idea that women have this moral obligation to fulfill their career, and the idea of leaving to take care of children or going part-time is just ludicrous. What about the men who do it?
Yeah.
And how many divorces are among, you know, in couples where one or both are doctors?
Yeah, those are both good questions. Let us raise that, Miriam. I appreciate your call. Dr. Seibert, Karen Seibert in LA, let me come back to you here. Let's start with Miriam. I mean, she's incensed at the idea of a moral obligation to fulfill a career. How do you respond to that?
Again, I don't think the moral obligation is to fulfill the career. I think the moral obligation we have is to take care of the patients in this country who need care.
Isn't that the
and
same
that was
thing?
Really the, no, it is not the same thing. If a career can mean a lot of different things. It can be a career in entertainment, a career in law. We're specifically talking about medicine and taking care of patients and the degree to which we have an increasing shortfall in the numbers of people available to do that. We also have a huge shortfall in nurses, for that matter, and the same constraints about expanding nursing schools. We just have a serious lack of medical care availability everywhere. And all I am really asking, I think we need to have this conversation mm-hmm. with high school and college students earlier in the game and say, do you really understand the situation of medical care in this country? We don't have enough. This is a commitment. People's lives are actually at stake. People who don't get timely medical care have all kinds of worse outcomes.
Well, let's say you're talking to a young woman who's 20 years old or 22 or 3 and having that conversation. She may very well anticipate having children one day. And what exactly are you saying to her with that?
I'm just saying to think about it more carefully than I think a lot of them currently are. I've had conversations with college students where they just assume that it's fine to work part-time. It's almost as though they think, well, the day I finish my residency, I'm going to work part-time or as little as possible, and that's that, without any sense of the resources that the public puts in to training mm-hmm. a doctor, the fact that Medicare dollars go into training residents. I think that even a lot of doctors don't realize that. They don't look at the economics of it. And in most medical groups, for example, part-time people really do raise costs. You pay the same malpractice insurance in your field if you work one day a year or 250 days a year. You're just covered or you're not covered.
You're right.
So
you
there
can't
are costs to all this.
You're right. You can't have it all. You say, I never took cupcakes to my children's homerooms. Does that mean there's a kind of mothering that by your lights you cannot expect to do if you're a doctor?
I think there's a kind of mothering that you don't do if you work full-time in any job. And the part of you asked us before the break mm-hmm. about how I had managed. And part of what I have done is looked for situations that conferred flexibility not necessarily reduction. For example, if I were an anesthesiologist in a small group at a community hospital, I wouldn't be able to be here to do this interview.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be in the operating room.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the reason I can be here is because I work for a large medical group that can cover for me. Nobody's doing without surgery this morning because I'm here. So flexibility is one thing, and a point that I made in something that I wrote previously. One day when my son was 19, he needed to have his tonsils out. And there was really not even any discussion between his father and me about who was going to take the day off to go to be with him. I did. And it wasn't because his father wouldn't have been willing to do it. And this is the point I made. I knew that as a mother, if I wasn't there, I wouldn't be able to concentrate. And it would be the most unfair thing in the world for me to go and anesthetize somebody that I wasn't going to pay proper attention to.
Karen,
so I think flexibility is key to being a good mother or a good parent and a good doctor. Let me make that point clear. I know a young woman who's about to finish her surgical residency whose husband is planning to stay home with their new baby. And I think that's terrific.
Let me bring into this conversation Dr. Maureen Conley. She's Dean for Faculty Affairs, Assistant Professor of Population Medicine at Harvard Medical School, and her research is focused on women in academic medicine. She's practiced internal medicine before joining the dean's office there, has four children. Maureen Conley, Dr. Conley, thanks very much for being here.
Great to be here, Tom.
Boy,
thanks for having me.
You see the kind of challenges and emotions and sort of real-life issues that come into play here. Is there an issue? Let's start not personally but nationally. Do we have an issue if, you know, some portion of the doctors that we educate, male or female, but we've got women kind of on the table here today, opt out in whole or part to raise children? Can we afford that?
You know, I don't think we have a choice, Tom, but to afford it, because physicians, many of them are parents. And I'm glad you said men or women. I'm glad Dr. Seibert mentioned she wasn't really focused on women, because I think we're wrong to say this is a gender issue. I think clinicians, physicians, scientists of this generation are deeply committed to trying to have it all. And I don't disagree at all with Dr. Seibert. You can't have it all in the same hour or on the same day.
But I'm looking here at the American Association of American Medical Colleges, who's projecting this physician's shortfall, and they have written about the feminization of medicine. And boy, I'm not bravo women doctors, I'm all for it, but they've written about it as one of the issues around the available person power to get the job done.
Right, but I think that medicine has a long tradition, Tom, of working in teams. We work with our nurse colleagues, our radiation therapist colleagues across the board, and I think the idea that we pass off care from one clinician who's on call to the clinician who comes in the next morning is longstanding in medicine. We don't really have that Norman Rockwell image of the solo practitioner who's available 24/7, whom we all assume is a he and has a wife at home. That's just not the model of healthcare and medicine any longer. We have a different view now, and I think it's very important to and agree with Dr. Seibert that flexibility is the word.
Do you see young medical students or residents who men, but women is kind of the issue as I read it here. Men too, I get it, for maybe different reasons sometimes, but are they coming into the field with the expectation that they will try and figure out some part-time way to have kids? Or, I mean, can you really do these 80, 100-hour weeks and have children? Do women in medical school think they can?
Well, I think that there's no one answer to that. Mm-hmm. I think that students, physicians, trainees are thinking broadly about the possibilities of medicine. I think it's really important to note that when individuals come to medical school, they don't check their personal lives at the door. They really come in with the potential to be scientists, administrators, educators. There's no guarantee that that physician who starts is actually going to be engaged in patient care. The vast majority of us are and are deeply dedicated and privileged to do so. But I think people are looking at a variety of career options in medicine, and that's one of the beauties of the field and always has been.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about a high-profile call for women doctors not to back off their careers, not to go part-time, not to quit for kids, not to take a mommy track. It's an issue around men as well, though sometimes for different reasons. With us today, Dr. Karen Seibert in Los Angeles. She's had four children. Essay in the New York Times last weekend was, "Don't Quit This Day Job." And she writes there about a moral obligation to serve once people have that precious medical Education. Also with us from Portland, Maine, Dr. Kathleen Fairfield. She does work part-time in medicine, and she says it works for her and her patients. Dr. Maureen Conley is with us from Harvard Medical School. She sees a lot of young people in the medical path here and is following the kind of decisions that they're making, that they're looking at. We're going to hear a little later, just in a few minutes, from the COO, Sheryl Sandberg of Facebook, and her talking about leaning in and leaning out of careers. But you can join the conversation. We have lots of response online, Drs. Seibert, Fairfield, and Connolly. Here, a listener says on our website, Dr. Seibert, thank you for writing what so many think. With the critical shortage of physicians on the horizon, we don't need anyone, male or female, dabbling in medicine. You can't pop in and out of medicine. On the other hand, here's Meg in Vermont writes, I wholly prefer a doctor who's a mother and works part-time to one who's charging toward the top of the field and making choices that are unhealthy for herself and her family. Rosalind writes, I can't believe this. I know many people who are male MDs who do not practice medicine and instead develop medical software or devices. And then Mike asks, I guess for you, Dr. Seibert, are you suggesting that medical students sign a contract like cadets do for the ROTC? Dr. Seibert, how about it?
Well, I really am not a policymaker, so I'm not claiming to have the answers. I really wanted to start the conversation, and I'm really happy to see that's what's happened. That has been suggested before, that there should be some sort of contract. I'm not recommending that one way or the other, but it's certainly under discussion.
Dr. Fairfield, let's come again, and Dr. Conley, to this issue of the number of doctors that we need and how we're going to have them. Let me come first to you, Maureen Conley. Should this issue come into play?
Well, I think we're really conflating systems problems with a gender issue. So I do think it's appropriate to talk about the physician workforce, but we have to think creatively and with innovation about how we're going to meet the needs of the public. And I don't think it's part-time work per se that puts us at risk. I would just say that we don't know in the arc of these women's careers, who are now the 50% of medical school classes, when they may come back to part-time or full-time or more than full-time, because I think we have a limited window, as one of the callers said, during which someone's raising his or her child and wants to be home. Later in the career, 5-10 years later, may be able to dedicate many more hours. And so we don't know what the full arc of a physician's career is going to be.
Kurt writes online here, so blame women doctors because Congress, and he writes, dare I say Republicans, refuse to pay for more medical training positions. I don't know if that's partisan or not, we'll ask. So there would be more doctors, so that doctors of any sex could have a more normal life. Pennywise, pound foolish congressmen are to blame here, not women doctors. Jeesh. Kurt writes. Kathleen Fairfield, what do you say?
I absolutely think that it's important to talk about this, not as necessarily a gender issue, because again, many academic physicians, for example, see patients only one or two sessions a week while they do research or education or scholarly work or leadership positions. They add obvious value to medicine outside of their time, face time with patients. And I think Dr. Seibert's, not really understanding the kind of the full scope of what physicians do, including the importance of us taking care of our families and community. And again, I'd like to come back to knowing that people who work part-time in medicine have higher satisfaction. Women, we know, also spend more time with their patients than do male physicians.
And if I could speak to that, that's exactly a point that I made earlier in the hour, that there are lots of ways in which physicians contribute other than at the bedside. So I completely agree with you there. I think, though, that what we have to consider, first of all, there's a study out of Massachusetts that found some of the opposite results, that women were the most satisfied when they were working the amount that they wanted to work. And actually, they found higher rates of satisfaction with women who worked full-time but were not overworked. And that, I think, is the key. And everybody's family is different as to what their needs and obligations are. So that's why bringing this down to the level of individuals is not terribly helpful. We can all cite examples. I think the more dangerous trend, though, is the people who just don't seem to realize what they're getting into when they start medical school, that patients' lives are really at stake here. In my field, we have a deep concern about what we call rare and critical events, the kinds of situations that may only come about a handful of times in a career. And as we lose that larger base of experience, is that going to cause problems? There's a study out of Europe that found more critical, devastating events under anesthesia with part-time providers. So in different fields, I think you have different issues. But again, I just want the high school and college students today to realize that this is a precious gift if they go to medical school and do a residency, and that they need to really respect that.
But you know, the kind of thinking that can come out of this, I mean, I'm looking at a headline here in Bloomberg Businessweek, women doctors, waste of money, ? Now, you were in the first big wave of women coming into medicine, Karen Seibert. Surely that's not the impression you're looking to give here.
Hardly. that would be ridiculous. I obviously think that women deserve equal opportunities in medicine, and I think everyone that we've heard today has done a great deal to prove that we can be great doctors, we can be great educators, we can do a lot of things. We can also be good mothers, but you don't have to be home any certain number of hours a day to be a good mother. I did not supervise my children's homework assignments. I didn't hover, but I have three great kids. And one of the reasons that I felt that I was in a position to write this article is because I've been there, I've done it, my kids are grown up. To date, none of them are axe murderers. And I actually have an adorable 7-month-old grandson.
Dr. Conley, you're at Harvard Medical School. Can you picture this kind of counseling with young candidates for medical education, male or female, but saying, you know, look, before Dr. Seibert saying, you know, think about this before you get into it. It's a different kind of commitment. In her words, it's a moral obligation. I mean, do you think young people are open to that? Can they really even understand what that means? Can a young woman say when she's, again, in her early 20s perhaps, setting out on this path, okay, I'll do mothering this way, not that way?
You know, I think we heard from one of the callers earlier, Kim, who talked about really not knowing the impact of what it meant to have a child, four children. So I don't think that we can absolutely advise and counsel women or men to make these decisions before they enter the profession. I agree with Dr. Seibert. I think it's very important that we make it clear what the possibilities and expectations in medicine are. But I also agree with her that working the amount one wants to work may lead to healthier physicians, better care, and greater job satisfaction, and that's really the goal.
Bruce in Boston. Bruce, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, my wife and I are both physicians.
Uh-huh.
My wife is an internist in an academic practice in the Boston area.
Okay.
And she's been practicing now for about 30 years. And when she first started in her job, it was a very novel idea for her boss to agree for her to go part-time. And it's been really one of the most amazing situations that we've been able to deal with. She's had a great career. We've raised three sons, and she has been at all the important events in our sons' lives. And
so how do you think about this issue, then, of you know, what moral obligation is here around serving once one has a medical education?
Well, I have to say, to sort of pin it all on women working part-time is sort of the wrong approach. I heard another caller say earlier that there are plenty of physicians who do no clinical medicine whatsoever once they go into the profession, and I happen to think that there has to be room for both. So that would be sort of where I see this issue.
Thanks for calling, Bruce. Dr. Seibert, how do we work this out? I mean, you're saying be careful, don't leave the field, don't work too few hours. We've got a structural problem. You've got a lot of individuals, you know, who are coming to an age of family, and they care about that. How do we fix this?
Well, I think policymakers really have an obligation to look at this more carefully. Men and women in medicine right now, in large numbers, are very dissatisfied. They're dissatisfied at the level of bureaucratic paperwork, the burdens of this constant supervision by different entities. They're They get discouraged by malpractice litigation. They get discouraged by the drop in pay that physicians have incurred over the last 20 years in real dollars, not just in dollars adjusted for inflation. And if policymakers don't work with us to try to make medicine a more satisfying field, I think more and more doctors, men and women, are going to vote with their feet and leave, and that would be the worst possible outcome. But again, I think that the answers to what make medicine stressful and unsatisfying come with looking at all these issues and make the work better, not make people want to do it less.
Is it a personal answer here, Dr. Connolly, or a public policy answer? If we're looking at 15 years from now, a shortage of up to 150,000 doctors, you know, does the answer lie, you know, in the pillow talk of people thinking about their careers and kids and all that, or does it lie in Congress or some of each?
I do think that we have a great need as a society to make decisions about commitments to providing good quality health care to all of our citizens, and that will mean systems changes. And it's systems changes at many levels. It's nationally looking at how we provide primary care, but it's even locally. That caller earlier who talked about not being able to reach her doctor when her daughter had problems. Mm-hmm. We need practice supports and new ways of doing primary care. I know Dr. Seibert brought up the point that women may become enamored as they become mothers and be less interested in medicine after all those years of investment. And I'm sure there are many who do make a decision not to pursue their career or to the extent that they wanted to because of that. But I also think there are many women who would stay engaged at maybe a larger percent of full-time equivalent, maybe 60, 70, 80%, if the practice systems we had made it possible for women to work more flexible hours. So I think there are some changes we could do structurally, both at the local level in our practices and then nationally.
Dr. Fairfield, we just have a few seconds, but what about the question, can you have it all? What's your advice to young doctors in the family, in the young family years?
I would absolutely hate to see women not go into medicine or not go to medical school or not do their residencies because they wanted to have a family. I think you can absolutely do both and do both well and with commitment.
Dr. Kathleen Fairfield, at the Associate Chief of Medicine at the Maine Medical Center, we thank you for being with us today. This has been really interesting. And Dr. Maureen Connolly at Harvard Medical School, our thanks to you as well. Thanks for coming in, Dr. Connolly.
Thank you, Tom.
Dr. Karen Seibert, author of the essay, Don't Quit This Day Job, in the New York Times in Los Angeles. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Seibert.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
In a moment, Facebook Chief Operating Officer Sheryl Sandberg's advice for women graduates of 2011. This is On Point. Last month, Facebook's Chief Operating Officer Sheryl Sandberg addressed the 2011 graduating class of Barnard College, the all-women's college in New York City. She told the class of 2011 not to lean back from careers, but to lean in, and then to make the decisions they need to make. Here's Facebook's Sheryl Sandberg.
I have a 6-year-old son and a 3-year-old daughter. I want more choices for both of them. I want my son to have the choice to be a full partner, not just at work, but at home. And I want my daughter to have the choice to do either, but if she chooses work, to be well-liked for what she accomplishes. I can't wait for the term work-life balance to be something that's not just discussed at women's conferences. Of course, not everyone wants to jump into the workforce and rise to the top. Life is going to bring many twists and turns, and each of us, each of you, have to forge your own path. I have deep respect for my friends who make different choices than I do, who choose the really hard job of raising children full-time, who choose to go part-time, who choose to pursue more non-traditional goals. These are choices that you may make someday, and these are fine choices, but until that day, do everything you can to make sure that when that day comes, you even have a choice to make. Because what I have seen most clearly in my 20 years in the workforce is this: women almost never make one decision to leave the workforce. It doesn't happen that way. They make small, little decisions along the way that eventually lead them there. Maybe it's the last year of med school when they say, I'll pick a slightly less interesting specialty because I'm going to want more balance one day. Maybe it's the fifth year in the law firm when they say, I'm not even sure I should go for partner because I know I'm going to want kids eventually. These women don't even have relationships, but already they're finding balance for responsibilities they don't yet have. And from that moment, they start quietly leaning back. The problem is often they don't even realize it. Everyone I know who has voluntarily left a child at home and come back to the workforce, and let's face it, it's not an option for most people, but for people in this audience, many of you are going to have this choice. Everyone who makes that choice will tell you the exact same thing. You're only going to do it if your job is compelling. If several years ago you stopped challenging yourself, you're going to be bored. If you work for some guy who you used to sit next to and really he should be working for you, you're going to feel undervalued, and you won't come back. So my heartfelt message to all of you is, and start thinking about this now, do not leave before you leave. Do not lean back, lean in. Put your foot on that gas pedal and keep it there until the day you have to make a decision, and then make a decision. That's the only way, when that day comes, you'll even have a decision to make. What about the rat race in the first place? Is it worthwhile? Or are you just buying into someone else's definition of success? Only you can decide that, and you'll have to decide it over and over and over. But if you think it's a rat race, before you drop out, take a deep breath. Maybe you picked the wrong job. Try again. And then try again. Try until you sign something that stirs your passion, a job that matters to you and matters to others. It is the ultimate luxury to combine passion and contribution. It's also a very clear path to happiness.
Facebook Chief Operating Officer Sheryl Sandberg addressing graduates of Barnard College in New York City. You can see the video and read a transcript of her address at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at the website. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.